everyone, and welcome to the Screen Strong Families podcast, bringing you the best solutions for parents who are serious about finally eliminating screen problems in their home. This is Melanie Hempe. And if you are one of our regular listeners, welcome back. If you are a new friend, we are so glad you found Screen Strong. Our show today is very different. We will be discussing the reality of cyberbullying and teen suicide. I know many of you listen to these podcasts as a family routine. So I am just so thankful that you do that and that you bring your kids into this discussion. It's such a great idea. But while our show today is one of the most important ones that we have ever done, it is for every parent and every adult. It is about the topic of teen suicide and cyberbullying, and it may not be fit for your very young children. So perhaps you wish to preview it and listen to it first before you introduce it to your family. Stats surrounding suicide and screen issues are on the rise, and they keep us constantly thinking about this topic. You know, at Screen Strong, we believe that research and all the data and the studies are very important to this issue. But while this data keeps us very sober for sure, it can also somehow keep us in a bubble of thinking that nothing like suicide will ever happen under our roof. Not my kid, we think, surely not my kid. And we believe the data, but we never believe it will really, really ever happen to us. And this is what we feel very strongly. It's Screen Strong that we get this information out, that we get the facts out, that we get the education out, and we bring guests like the guest we have today. Our guest today is a parent, just like many of you. She thought the same thing, not my kid, not under my roof. She did everything she knew to protect her family, but was completely blindsided by what happened. So we have the incredible honor of meeting Kristen Bride today. She has reached deep, like many people just can't do in this situation. And she has become a force to educate the public on the role that social media plays in online bullying and the reality of the ultimate tragedy, teen suicide. Kristen's life changed forever on June 23rd in 2020 when her 16-year-old Carson died by suicide following cyberbullying through Snapchat and the use of other anonymous apps. You may remember her testimony at the Senate committee in February, I believe it was this year. And so today we will get to know Carson's story and his legacy. And we are so incredibly honored to visit with one of the most brave moms I've met. Welcome, Kristen.
Thank you for having me, Melanie.
We are so thrilled that you are just going to join our Screen Strong community here and talk to our parents. And I wish I could just give you a big, huge hug because I am going to try to get through this without getting too emotional. My hat is off to you and how you can constantly rise to these occasions to talk about your story. I am so grateful that you are willing to step out. We know that change will only happen when people like you stand up out of the dark and shed light on this pain and speak the truth. It's the only way we can prevent others from going down the same path. You are saving kids. Thank you so much for joining us. I am just already thankful for the lives that are going to be touched today and the thousands and thousands of parents that are going to hear this story and the moms and dads out there, they're going to hit share and they're going to share this podcast. So let's start with Carson. I want you to tell us about your son and who he was and just give us a picture of how everything happened. There are so many families, I think, Kristen, that are just right on the brink of exactly what happened to your family.
Yes. Carson was an amazing kid, beautiful blue eyes, smile that lit up the room. He would, in the winter, teach kids how to ski with his dad. And he was getting into theater. He was great at it. He loved playing the card game Magic the Gathering with his brother and would do tournaments. And he really wanted to make the world a better place. He was kind and compassionate and sensitive. And it was an absolute shock when he ended his life. He had just gotten his first summer job making pizzas down the street, and he came home and we were so impressed. This was during COVID. He had walked down to this pizza place repeatedly interviewing, and he came home and he wrote his upcoming work schedule on our kitchen calendar. And so it was just a wonderful night and everyone was hopeful. It was summer, we could get outside. And I woke up the next morning and saw that the door to his room was open, but I actually thought nothing of it, because sometimes he slept up in our loft when he had a hard time sleeping. And so I went to my computer and started doing some research, and I looked down at my phone because we kept our phones in the kitchen, and saw that there was a text from Carson to his brother, his father, and myself regarding suicide. And at that point, my life completely changed. My heart stopped, and I went running to the other side of the house and found him hanging in our garage. Mm. And there are just no words to describe the horror of that morning. We did not understand why this happened. Everything seemed to be going so well for him. And it was just about 2 weeks later that we started to hear through the school community that he had been bullied over YOLO. And I didn't even know what that was. So to kind of backstep a little bit, we were really conservative parents with technology. Although he went to a school where kids were getting phones in fourth grade, we waited until eighth grade, and he was the last kid in his class to get a phone. And in that way, we avoided actually a lot of drama and problems. Even in like fifth grade, the kids were sending around nudes of each other. But Carson was not involved in that. And we spoke to our kids repeatedly about the harms that can happen on social media. It follows you your entire life. You know, when you go to get a job, employers are looking at Facebook, and that, you know, never ever say anything, type anything online that you don't want with your face and name next to it. And I actually made that as a sign over my kids' computers. And so we had these discussions, and it was in eighth grade that his older brother went to high school. And so he needed some way to communicate with us. And we ended up giving him a very old iPhone with no apps on it. And we had really hoped that we could keep it that way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in our gut, we knew that there was going to be more of a demand. And that happened in high school when he begged us for Snapchat, because that's the way all the kids were connecting. They weren't using phones. They weren't using text. And so we let him have Snapchat, but that's all that we knew. What we didn't know was that Snapchat had allowed two startup apps that allowed anonymous messaging mm-hmm. to get onto their back end and have access to their millions of teen users. And so that's what was used to cyberbully Carson in the weeks leading to his death. He had received, and he had a private account. So these are his Snapchat friends, his high school classmates. These are not people from around the world.
Right.
And they were sending him humiliating, threatening, very sexually explicit messages. And honestly, in the end, I am so proud of how he reacted to it. He never lowered himself. He asked the kids to swipe up and identify themselves so that they could talk things out in person, and no one ever did. And, you know, I try to let people, especially adults, realize that even as an adult, if suddenly your friends on your phone list started anonymously sending you hateful messages and you didn't know who they were, that would be really devastating, even as an adult. And what we know is that kids that are being cyberbullied, only 10% tell an adult or a parent. Kirsten and I were super close. He told me when bad things happened at school and when kids said hurtful things at school, but he didn't tell me this. And often kids want to be able to handle it themselves, which he was trying to do. They also don't want to be seen as a snitch. And they're also so addicted to their phones, they don't want, they fear that they will be taken away.
That somebody's going to take their phone away.
Right. Once, in what Carson did, which was wonderful, he took screenshots of what, because with Snapchat messages go away, he took screenshots of what was sent to him. And so in investigating his phone, we did see the level of bullying that occurred. And I started to do research on Yolo, and I had no idea what this company was about. And they had policies in place that really lured kids into thinking that this was a safe app. They said they would monitor for cyberbullying and reveal the identities of those who do so and ban them from their app. But when I asked Yolo, let them know what happened to my son, I asked them to follow their own policies, I was ignored. And Carson was going through the same thing. His last search on his phone was for hacks to find out who was harassing him on these anonymous apps. He never found out.
He is just so horrible. And it's like he was so alone trying to fight this huge monster, and he couldn't, and nobody can.
Right.
I love what you just said a second ago about everybody listening. If you can just close your eyes and think for a second how you would feel if this was happening to you as an adult. Just, it's impossible to imagine what this does to a child. It's, and you've had to go there so many times in your own heart and try to figure it out. And I know from talking to parents how even moms I talk to get their feelings hurt so deeply when little things happen, and this is just insurmountable. Can you explain just a little bit about Snapchat, and could you have, because I don't think you could have ever even seen this, but explain to our audience with Snapchat. We have a lot of young families that are asking questions. Is it okay for me to get Snapchat, you know, for my kid, or to let them have it? Explain the problem. Explain that even if you had tried to pick it up and look at it every night, you wouldn't have seen anything. Explain how that works a little bit.
Right. Well, the messages do disappear. And so the fact that we had an evidence trail was only because Carson took screenshots of what was happening to him. And so Snapchat doesn't allow parent monitoring software on their back end. And so, you know, you really, and we were also people that talked to our kids like, these are our phones. We pay for the phones. We get to know your password. So we knew both of our kids' passwords for their phone, and we can take it away if it's a problem.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there are not going to be any secrets here unless you're going to, and it doesn't exist, sit in front of your kid's phone all day long and look at the exchanges. I just really don't know how you guarantee that this isn't going to happen. They're going to run into trouble. And, you know, hopefully it's not the level that Carson ran into.
But there's no guarantee. The risk is very high that it will happen to many kids. In fact, I can guarantee, if I was a betting person, I would bet that 100% of kids who have been on Snapchat have been bullied in some way, shape, or form. It's just part of, you know, sure, maybe there's a lot of good, but there's always the flip side and the dark side, and kids are kids and teenagers are teenagers and they are not adults and they do not know how to act wise.
Yeah, the phone really takes away the level of empathy.
Yes. Talk about that a minute. Yes.
So when you're hurting somebody, you're not seeing the pain on their face like you would if you had said that during school. And remember, this was during COVID. So this was the only way that the kids were able to communicate. And then just to, this idea, and kids are cruel to each other on Snapchat when their name is associated with what they're saying. But when you bring in anonymous apps,
yeah,
and give kids absolutely no accountability for what they're saying,
yeah,
it makes it so difficult for the person trying to figure out who's doing this. Is it 10 people? Is it one person?
Mm-hmm.
Is it my whole class? Also, the traditional upstanders can't really be that because they don't know who to call out.
Yeah.
And then when you look at the history of anonymous apps, this was preventable. Anonymous apps have been around for decades. And when they're marketed to teens, mm-hmm, they have always led to cyberbullying and then a suicide, and then they shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And then a new one comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Because what better way to make a profit by keeping kids on their screens looking at the drama?
Yeah.
We know that's their business model, right? The social media companies. It's all about engagement.
Yes. And it's all about monetizing drama. But mm-hmm, because at that age, and we have to admit, even in our adult years, the drama is what we have a hard time staying away from. But when you are a teenager, you're living the drama and you're contributing to the drama. And you can't help it. It's like you can't blame the teenagers. Like, their brain is not there yet. They're very intelligent, but they are not mature enough to handle this. So it is just the perfect storm, mm-hmm, of all the things that come together. And years ago, like if we were sitting down 20 years ago saying, let's imagine like the worst possible thing for a teenager to do. And that's what this is. This, mm-hmm, is being able to talk ugly about people anonymously, getting away with it, hurting people, and getting some kind of joy out of the pain and suffering of others. Like, this is what we, you know, the empathy piece is what we have to constantly teach in our homes, because the screen is sort of just completely like negating it.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything that empathy is not, in what you just said about not being able to see another human face. That's the problem.
And we also have to remember, it's not a one-on-one assault in a hallway. This goes viral.
Right.
So you are also realizing that your entire, like in Carson's class, his entire Snapchat friend group was watching this happen. So it's public. It's public to your friend group. Carson had a private account. So we thought we had done everything right, and yet this still happened to us. And so I really, when I was ignored 4 times by YOLO, I realized that I could sit at home and cry about this for the rest of my life, or I could rip the Band-Aid off and go public. And that's what I chose to do. And unfortunately, the only way I could get YOLO to respond was to file a national class action lawsuit against Snapchat, YOLO, and LMK. And as a result of that, Snapchat immediately suspended YOLO and LMK, so they could no longer harm teens. So that felt great.
Wow.
And then they made a policy change a little bit later that they would not allow anonymous apps on their back end because they could not mitigate the harms at an acceptable level. Now, of course, I wish they had thought about that beforehand, especially with the history of anonymous apps. That was a shining light in this horrible nightmare that Carson, the kid who wanted to make the world a better place, did. through his story and through our advocacy. But unfortunately, just like 6 months later, a new anonymous app comes out called Not Gonna Lie, NGL. And what they're doing is they found a way to further monetize this product by charging kids money for useless hints as to who is messaging them.
Oh, no.
Such as you might be able to ride your bike to their house.
They have
an iPhone 13. Nothing that would ever narrow it down to who is actually messaging them. And again, that puts kids in a horrific situation. They're desperate to find out who is sending them the message, and they're paying for it, and they're not able to find out. And so that's where I decided to take my efforts to a higher level and lobby for federal legislation, the Kids Online Safety Act, COSA, so that these companies have a duty of care to our children when they are creating these products.
That when you were just describing that, I'm just getting so sick to my stomach. That's making me anxious. The thought that kids are having to pay to get the clues to figure out who's doing this.
The clues aren't gonna lead them to who's
they're still not even gonna lead. Of course, what a terrible, horrible, nasty thing. I can't even imagine. I just want everybody out there listening to this story. This is real. This is super, this is really happening. This is not like out of some fantasy novel. This is what's happening to our kids. And we don't want to draw the wrong attention to it, but we have to draw attention to this, and parents have to know. So I know that your desire is for your game plan, so to speak, to kind of hit into three areas. The first one is locally, right?
Yep.
And working with schools. And so our audience is full of school age families. So let's talk about that for a second, just locally and then on a state level and then on a federal level. And then after we do that, I want to get back to just a few more questions, but let's first talk about your desire and what your vision is for these three levels.
Well, when Carson passed, I did decide that I was going to focus my efforts on these three levels, and I worked with Carson's school. I know a lot of parents in this situation use their grief to go talk to schools and to kids. That's just not, it's too traumatizing for me. But I did work with the administration and brought in experts on cyberbullying. And, you know, I really think that, and whenever I have any information that applies to schools, I send it to Carson's school. They're really trying to change the culture at the school. They brought in mental health professionals and are really trying to get a relationship with the kids so that when they see something, they say something. And that has been a positive experience. They did a lot of things around Carson's death as far as fundraisers for Lines for Life, the local suicide hotline, and a memorial that emphasizes kindness matters. I think that every school needs to have that message written as the kids walk in the door, that how you treat somebody matters. You know, there's so many different things as far as, you know, digital wellness that schools can do, and really keeping the social media out of the schools as far as phones are either put away or not allowed at all. They're taken away if they're taken out in class.
The less access they have, that's with anything, right? It's all about access whenever you're dealing with problems like this. And so and the less they have of that being normalized in their whole school day, the more they do other things. And it's kind of not right on the top of their mind, like their Snapchat isn't in their pocket every second of the day. And that kind of helps. And I think that this idea of education in the schools is so, so critical. It's hard work. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people just get exhausted over the thought of it, but it is so critical. And we have a new student course releasing September first. And we have a whole section on cyberbullying and just talking about it, bringing it up, putting words to it. That is such an incredible goal to have. You have to start somewhere, and it always starts with education. If people don't know that it's happening, there's no way you can go to your next your next step, which is at the state level, right? So you have to educate first, which is, again, what we are all about here. And I want you to speak into this one particular lesson in our course. I would love you for you to look at it, because I think you might even could offer even better things in there. But then the next thing would be the state level. What can people today know about that?
Well, every state has different bullying and cyberbullying laws. And so I reached out to our state representatives and I asked how Carson's story could help strengthen these laws. And we had a representative that had worked 3 years on strengthening the bullying laws in the state of Oregon. And she was not able to pass this law. And it required that school districts notify the parent of the aggressor and the victim in cases of bullying and cyberbullying. And that wasn't on the books. And so I testified telling Carson's story, and it passed unanimously, and it's nicknamed Carson's Law. And so everyone should look at their state laws and understand what they are as pertaining to their particular state, and look for ways that they may need to be strengthened.
And that website is stopbullying.gov. That was one of the websites.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a great one to look up the laws by state.
And then the federal level, what can parents do on that level?
Well, right now there is a specific ask of parents. We would like every parent who is concerned about this issue to call their U.S. state senators and ask them to support or co-sponsor the Kids Online Safety Act, COSA. And this is, like I mentioned before, what it does is it imposes a duty of care for online platforms to prevent and mitigate specific harms, including social media addiction, promotion of suicide, eating disorders, cyberbullying, substance abuse. So if I can apply it in the real world, if COSA was around, the company LMK and YOLO, when they came out with their anonymous app, they could have been, their lawyers, if it was a federal law, would have said, this is not going to fly because this design is dangerous and it's been proven to be dangerous in the past.
Mm-hmm.
The other example that's pretty egregious is Snapchat had a speed filter. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, Melanie. That was around for 8 years before it was taken down, but it allowed kids to drive fast and take pictures and get likes and flames for how fast they're going. And, it doesn't take a genius to understand what happened in the end. A lot of people died from kids from fiery, and so that's an example of really on the most egregious level of the types of designs that are out there for profit, but not for the safety of our kids. And so as sad as it is that we have to put this into federal law, that these companies actually have a duty of care to our children, it's needed because it's not happening right now.
Yeah. And without it, it's just everything goes, right?
Anything goes. It's the Wild West. So that's one of the things that I really appreciate about this bill. The other part that relates to Carson's story is that it will require social media companies to respond to parents and users that are in crisis regarding something that is being sent out on their platform. I often get calls from parents saying that my kid is on a suicide watch because of something slanderous that's going around on Instagram. I reach out to Instagram and I get either no response or a canned response that it meets community guidelines when it definitely does not. So that will really change the game that they absolutely, like every other industry in America have to have a person responding to these issues and these kids and parents who are in crisis. It also requires the strongest and most protective settings by default for kids so that, parents don't want a free ride here. They want to be involved, but it's impossible. It's not a fair fight as it is now. You just don't have, 50 hours to learn Snapchat and Instagram.
Right.
And so that would be great. You can turn off the algorithms a lot. We didn't even get into that aspect, but so many of the harms are not what kids are looking up. It's what's fed to them through the algorithms.
Yes.
And so parents would be able to turn that off, restrict times, view metrics. If you are a parent that wants your kid to have more freedoms online, then you can, turn those settings off, but at least they come to you by default at the safest setting. These companies will finally be audited like other companies. We fly in planes, we drive in cars. They weren't the safest to begin with, but they were made that way because there was accountability. And this is really what we're asking. These are responsible safeguards that we would expect in any other industry where our kids were.
And I think back to what you mentioned that was very intriguing at the beginning was this idea that only 10% of kids are going to report what's happening. So parents are not only dealing with all the issues around what you were just talking about with the social media companies and working against them, but they also have a teen brain they're dealing with, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who is not going to be the police, like they can't expect their teenager to tell them what's going on. And the other thing I'm always so fascinated in a really sad way is the speed with which all this happens. Like with Carson, he was fine.
Yeah.
It's not like you had a track record of weeks that you were dealing with this.
He had just gotten a job. He was happy. It was a matter of really 2 weeks of just intense cyberbullying that pushed him over the edge.
But you weren't aware even.
No.
And see, the fact that it's 10% in some respect, that seems even high to me because I don't expect any teenager to, when you think about it, to tell on their friends, right? And to they're always thinking there's something wrong with them. Because they're constantly trying to figure out who they are, and this is their stage of life. And I remember reading the book, The Teenage Brain, by Frances Jensen. Do you remember that book?
I don't know if you've ever read it.
But there's a story in there that she talks about a group of teenagers that allowed their friend to get drunk and actually disappear in a snowdrift. They were up north, and he went to walk home. And they let him do this knowing a drunk person can't walk through a snowdrift 5 miles to go home, right?
Mm-hmm.
But no one told an adult because they didn't want him to get in trouble for drinking. Well, he passed away. They found him frozen in the snow. And all the teenagers said, all his friends said, well, we couldn't tell anybody because he'd have gotten in trouble for drinking. Well, but he's passed away now. So
they can't see past the immediate situation. They're kind of in tunnel vision, right? Like Carson couldn't see that he would get through this, that this was not going to be his entire life. And that's what's just heartbreaking.
Oh, and it's so not his fault. Like there's nothing wrong with him. He was exposed to things that no human being ever should have been ever in their lifetime exposed to. And then I feel like sometimes parents, think, well, it's here to stay. They have to learn how to do it. They have to get over it. And I just have to say that there are certain seasons of life where this just isn't true.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get a 5-year-old to drive a car. That's ridiculous. And I think it's ridiculous to think that a teenager can handle the pressure of any of these things that you're talking about, much less as much as it looked like he had on his plate.
Mm-hmm.
So based on your experience now in everything that you know, and I know this is probably really a really hard question, and I don't want anything to be hard here, but what advice do you give parents that are dealing with this right now that do have some warning signs and that maybe have that gut feeling like, I don't know, something's off. But they're not telling me anything. You said that y'all talked about it every day whatever. I recommend, of course, dinner, have that routine time to say, okay, is everybody okay? Has anybody seen anything? And then also has anyone here in our home done anything, right? Because there's two people involved here. And I worry not only that my kids are going to get bullied, but what are they responsible for?
Mm-hmm.
What are they saying to someone that they may think is a joke? Because this is what I hear from teenagers all the time. Well, I was just teasing. It was just a joke, Mom. It was just a joke. I'm like, no. We have to constantly explain the difference. But based on your experience, what advice do you give parents that are dealing with it on the surface? I mean, you didn't even have a chance to deal with it, but for the people that are dealing with it, what do you tell them?
Well, I mean, if they know that their child's being cyberbullied, then, you know, getting them to see a counselor as soon as possible would be great. And to continue the conversation and just even asking the question, what's the worst thing that you've seen online? You know, not like, have you seen cyberbullying, or, you know, trying to get, and often those conversations come up when you're doing something else. If you're working on an activity together, when you're
driving in the car,
when you're side by side doing something else, it's a really tricky age. Carson was 16. So developmentally, they're pulling away from parents a little bit.
Sure.
And they're wanting, and their peers are way more important than their parents. Mm-hmm. So even though we were like, great, you got this job, you're amazing, he had this other feedback from these people that were so important to him at the time developmentally. And I think just keeping those conversations going. And even, you know, what I did was would say, you know, hey, you know, I heard the story about, you know, this fifth grader who was sending around nudes, and do you know that's child porn? And, you know, like, trying to, you know, about other things. I remember my boys, like, their eyeballs. And, you know, that's the other thing. Carson was, during this whole stage, he was asked to send nudes, and he goes, I don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel like, even though the result was horrendous, I do think that our messaging got through to him. I just wish the parents of the aggressors had done the same thing with their kids.
Right. That is such a powerful statement.
Mm.
We all need to look in our own home and not only be aware that this could happen to our kids, but to really think about what our own kids are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be sober to that. We can't say, not my kid, on both ends.
Right. And, you know, I can only imagine what it must be like for these kids to go through life knowing what they contributed to. You don't want your child to have to live with that. And you never, even though it may be teasing to them, you never know what's going through somebody's head on the other side.
That's right. That's right. And how hurtful it is. And when I do my in-person workshops, I usually go around and ask the audience and talk about, remember back in middle school, think of a hurtful thing that someone said. And do you know that 100% of the audience can remember. They can remember a hurtful thing in middle school. And then as you go through high school, these things stick in our brains because they're that powerful. And what the person said, you know, may just be all in a day of making fun, but it can stick with someone for 20 and 30 and 40 years in their brain. And that's the piece. I love what you just said, that to ask them what was the worst thing they you know, experience that day. I love that because it's not, it's just the way that that question comes is so much easier to answer than, did you see something or did someone say something? Say, hey, what was the worst thing that happened today? Yep. I mean, that's brilliant. Even that, just that question, you know, alone gets them to start talking. And then what about the idea that parents feel like that their teens, you know, social media world is private and they need to not meddle, right? They need to not know. Just talk about privacy. I'm sure that you feel very different, or at least pretty strong about teenage privacy on phones, right?
Yeah. You know, I really feel like there's a middle ground. And I think it's when they're not an adult and you're paying for their phone, I think there needs to be communication. You need to know their passwords, not that you need to be looking at their phone constantly, but you've got to talk about how you behave online, that it's not, you know, it's a, how you behave online is a reflection of yourself and your entire family, and guide them through this process of becoming an adult. Because as we talked about, the teenage brain isn't fully developed and they're prone to be impulsive and not think about the consequences. And these are real consequences when we're talking about social media.
I just believe that secrets and things that happen in the dark are never good. They're never good. And the truth comes out when there's light. And I know that you have suffered in a way that is so unbelievable and that most parents can't even fathom. But the next time, I guess, if you're listening, if you're just the next time that you have a gut feeling that something's up, you do want to dig, you want to ask more questions, you want to realize that this is a tool that can be good, but it's also just a huge city dump is what I call it. And you never know what they're going to get that day. And I also feel like just the mission of Screen Strong is to encourage parents that it's really okay if you want to hit the pause button and skip this for a while. And, you know, kids need a break. They just need a break, and you may need to take a season of 6 months. I mean, you know, for parents that come to you, Kristen, and they're just struggling so much, don't you think that's a great suggestion?
Oh, absolutely. And I encourage waiting as long as possible. You never hear a parent that says, I wish I had given my kid a phone earlier. And I mean, you will lose part of your child once that phone gets in their hands, and it will never be the same again. And the fights will begin. And I always encourage parents that you want your kids to develop the meaning of a real friendship before they start measuring themselves by likes and followers. Because until they have that foundation, their whole world is kind of built on something that's not real. And I think that's so important. And I am so inspired by all the parents that come to me and say, my kid is 13, we don't have a phone. Actually, they're doing great. They're developing friendships. They have other activities. If more parents can do it and then also be around other parents that are like-minded in this way, I think we can create a movement where we can get our kids back.
Well, you just described Screen Strong. That's why we're here. That's exactly why we're here. We are here to say it's okay. Be different. It's fine. You know, your kids are not going to feel as bad doing that as they're going to feel online with the alternative.
Definitely.
So let's end with just a little bit of encouragement. I know that I just thank you so much for everything that you've shared. You've opened the doors, and I know for a fact that your testimony and Carson's story will change the direction of a family out there listening today. So we know that already. What can you tell the mom who has that gut feeling? She knows she gave that phone too early. She knows they're way in over their head, and she needs to now pull back and restart. And how can you encourage her? Because it's so hard. Or maybe it is the mom that you talk to that has already their teen on suicide watch. What encouragement can you offer?
To keep talking with your kids, keep doing things with your kids. There's so much to life outside of that screen. And, you know, even take them on a vacation where no one has their phones. You know, just try to bring kids back to the way things were before this happened to us.
That is wonderful. I always say that every screen problem can be helped by doing just that, spending more time with your kids, putting your own phone away and saying, you matter. Let's go get some frozen yogurt tonight after dinner and let's spend that purposeful time. And it's crazy that we have to think about purposely doing that. But I really, really do believe that that is the answer. Thank you so much for saying that. And just thank you again. I'm going to say it again, so much for your story. We know that change will only happen when people like you stand up out of that dark place, because not everybody can do it. And you are doing it. And you are shedding light on this pain. And you're speaking the truth. And that's the only way that change will ever happen. And what you mentioned about getting in a community, you're exactly right. And that's why Screen Strong is here, to gather these like-minded families that want to do something different. But you're preventing others from the same tragedy, and it doesn't help your pain. But we want to thank you, and we want you to know from the bottom of our hearts and from the bottom of my heart today, we want to thank you. I want to thank you so much for sharing. You're not alone, and we will always, Screen Strong and personally me, we will always be right by your side in getting this message out. So thank you, and please let us know what else we can do. You are saving kids, Kristen.
Oh, thank you. And please, everyone, remember to call your U.S. senators and ask them to support the Kids Online Safety Act.
Perfect. And we're going to put that information in our show notes. So thank you again, Kristen. I'm going to be getting to know you better and helping you more with your passion. Thank you all for joining us today and taking the time to just listen to this story. Please pass this podcast on to your friends. And as Kristen told us, please pass this information on to your schools and reach out to your senators. Also, reach out to us if you are scared right now, if you need more help, if you have questions regarding cyberbullying in teenagers, and get our student course. There is a whole lesson in there on this, so you can sit down and go through this with your kids if you're having trouble with that conversation. Most importantly, stay connected to Screen Strong and don't doubt your gut feeling if something is wrong. Remember, we've got your back and we are here to help you. So until next time, stand up for your kids, stand out from that crowd, and stay strong.